Not so long ago in Australia, roast chicken. Now, that was a bit of a luxury. Go back even further, it was maybe an annual treat. Now, well, we buy chicken, any other sort of meat too, with a sort of abandon. Well, it used to be a special occasion. It isn't. Meat is as cheap as chips, if you'll excuse that mixed metaphor. What, though, is the true cost of the meat we buy? And is our reliance on that cheaper meat, is that detrimental not only to the environment, to the welfare of animals, to the health of our own bodies? Think about those things. We're going to talk them over. David Simon, he is a US-based lawyer. He's the author of Meatonomics. Now, he's been on a speaking tour of Australia, sponsored by the animal protection organisation Voiceless. And we're also joined by Craig Hinchliffe. Now, he is a lamb producer from the Grampians in beautiful Western Victoria. Welcome both. And can I begin with you, David? There's a subheading in your book, How the Rigged Economics of Meat and Dairy Make You Consume Too Much. Is that the key to our problem?
Well, I certainly think that that's a major part of the problem. One of the features with meat today is that producers are enabled to keep its price extremely low, which means that consumers end up buying more of it. It's sort of a basic economic principle, the law of demand. As prices go down, consumption goes up. And what we see both in Australia and in the US today is that consumers are consuming meat at a per capita rate that is among the highest in the world. And it's giving us all kinds of problems, personal health, environmental issues, animal ethical issues, and others.
How do we get that price so low?
I think it has to do with a combination of things, including subsidies and legislation that state and federal governments have passed, again, in both countries, that protect large factory farmers and allow them to offload the majority of their production costs onto society. Once they've offloaded those costs, they're allowed to lower their retail prices to consumers considerably.
Craig, how does that affect you? You're not a large factory farmer. I mean, do you find it difficult to get the true price for what you produce?
Yeah, no, it's very difficult for family farms. And I would say they're small to medium farms. So most farms now in Western Victoria, if you're 750 hectares or less and you're stuck in a commodity market to earn your living, you're really struggling. It's really tough. And part of the issue is, if you have an ethical production paradigm where you want to ensure that the lambs that you're producing are genuine pasture-fed lambs and they have lots of space and that you respect their herding and grazing instincts, the retail price is very tight because the supply chain now takes two-thirds of the profit. So I'm a fifth-generation farmer. When my grandfather was working and running this property, he would get about two-thirds of the end retail price for the product that he sold. And one-third would go to the supply chain, the processors, the retailers. Now, it's entirely the other way. So the share that the farmer can earn is much, much tighter. And that's driving people towards industrial production practices, which is unfortunate for the environment. It's unfortunate for the depletion of families in the rural areas of Australia, and it's bad for nutrition. Animals that are forced to be fed a lot in quite artificial, unhealthy environments just don't deliver the same nutrition. And so I guess part of the thing that I observe, and most of the farming families that are my neighbours, we observe is the sorts of food that we see in supermarkets we wouldn't like to eat. You know, we just don't think that they're good-looking products, but they don't stack up nutritionally.
This is really interesting, David. I'm wondering if what you're hearing there is almost a description of the US a couple of decades back, if this is this is the way this changes.
Well, I would think that that's a common complaint among smaller to mid-sized farmers in the US as well, that because once you internalize those production costs, and as Craig is doing, he's attempting to raise animals in a more ethical and healthier way than factory farmers can, it's that internalization of production costs that requires a farmer to pay for those things himself. And he has a challenging time offloading them onto consumers. I think that's why factory farmers have an advantage, unfortunately.
You argue that in the US that the meat industry is operating in many ways a similar way to big tobacco, the way it used to. Can you explain that?
Yeah, you know, one issue that we haven't touched on yet, but that I'll mention briefly, is that increasingly we're seeing some of the health effects of meat being called into question. The World Health Organization, for example, now lists red meat as a class 2A carcinogen, meaning it is probably carcinogenic to humans, and at least processed meat is a class 1 carcinogen, meaning it is known to be carcinogenic to humans. And I think one of the challenges that we're facing as we look for ways to both produce and consume meat in a sustainable way is we're sort of back where we were with tobacco in 1950 before its adverse health effects were acknowledged by the medical community and by policymakers. You know, in 1953, for example, Chesterfield cigarettes ran magazine ads that said Chesterfield has no known adverse effects when you smoke it. And other ads said 9 out of 10 doctors prefer Chesterfields. So we're sort of at a place where, in order to allow smaller farmers like Craig and his affiliates to succeed, I think we need to lower our consumption levels of meat. It needs to be lowered to more sustainable levels. And I think in order to get there, we need to acknowledge some of these adverse health effects so that people simply understand that the more they eat, the worse it is for them.
I think you'd be on side with this, wouldn't you, Craig? I mean, the adverse health effects come by and large through overconsumption, and I'm guessing that if we consumed less but paid more for it, and if it was of good quality, that would please people like you.
Absolutely, and it sounds quite counterintuitive. A family farm that produces lamb thinking that, you know, it would be good if consumers ate less. But that's exactly right. We'd actually like to see people buying food based on nutritional information. And what we would argue is, if you really knew the nutritional profile of the meat in the display cabinets, you would turn away and very quickly go and order directly from the farmer, where you have confidence and full traceability as to how those animals were cared for and actually were produced. And I would say one little thing about subsidy, and that's quite true. A lot of the food in Australia today is subsidised, but it's by the invisible farmers. And that is the working spouses, the teachers, the nurses, the people that earn off-farm income to enable these small family farms to continue. That's a form of subsidy. And the people that are receive the most benefit from that are probably the consumer and the big supermarkets and value chains that take most of the profit from the food chain. But it's very interesting, and I feel that there's a lot of good points in what David has written. As controversial as it will be for many people in the farming and community, even here in Australia.
We're looking at the true cost of meat here on Blueprint. Craig Hinchliffe, he's a fifth-generation farmer, Western Victoria. David Simon is the author of Meatonomics. I want to get to Craig's experience and family experience over time, but David, first, that issue of subsidy and the political clout, I guess, of big agriculture is substantial and perhaps distorts a lot of farming production, a lot of consumer behaviour as well.
That's completely true. And as Craig said, they're not only sort of the direct and known subsidies, but there are indirect subsidies. And I would argue that many of these production costs that are offloaded onto taxpayers and consumers are yet another form of invisible subsidy. And in order to really address this issue, I think we're going to have to figure out ways to make factory farmers internalize those costs and stop offloading them and stop seeking subsidies from government and from others in the industry.
Tell us about this, Craig. Go back over those five generations, and how has that process of production changed?
There's a term called a declining terms of trade. And essentially, as my great-great-grandfather, when he arrived, there was here in Western Victoria in 1852, there was quite an increased demand. The demand was greater than supply, and the ability for food producers to be able to set prices was much more available in the whole economic construct during that period. And over successive generations, we've seen more and more production or more land clearance, increased production in other parts of the world, and we've seen increasing costs in highly developed countries. We've had the price of labour is going up exponentially. All of the input costs, such as diesel fuel, fertilisers, are increasing at very rapid rates. Mm. But our country, our environment, actually can't carry more animals. You know, we can do things to artificially stimulate production, but true profitability lies in finding that nice balance, those environmental balances that enable us to continue to sustain what we're doing. And we can't afford to mine the environment in which we live. So I guess when we do a bit of research and we see the changes that climate change is having, we see global trade expanding exponentially, really low costs of shipping. There's a new dimension to ethical food production now, and also accountability and traceability. So The small farms here in Western Victoria a century ago were only really competing with other food producers within a radius of 100 kilometres. Today, it's very much a global phenomenon. And Australia, and I guess America, runs this risk as well, is we've really had a decline in our manufacturing sector because we just couldn't compete against the efficiencies and the low input costs of other countries. And I think agriculture is being dragged in the same direction. The price of well-intended regulation is phenomenal. And a hidden cost is the price we pay for so few corner market stores now and so few small processors. The distortion of the value of the food value chain by really big players like supermarkets and the big agribusiness companies that own the processing facilities. They are the real price takers. And that's the biggest change over the generations.
And I guess, David, that's where another big change comes too in those supermarkets, which is the consumer expectation, the expectation that I can walk in there and I can buy that lamb at a ridiculous price, never mind that it's factory produced, that it's not good for me, it's cheap. And is that the expectation we need to deal with?
Yes, that's a continuing problem. Lamb prices I'm not familiar with because it's not as important a commodity in the U.S., but we know that with chicken, the prices of chicken have fallen 70%, the retail price on an inflation-adjusted basis in 70 years. And as those prices have come down 70%, people have increased their consumption five or sixfold, which shows that they are entirely responsive to those price cues. Consumers are rational actors, and they will respond to price. And as long as prices stay unreasonably and artificially low, people will continue to consume meat, not just chicken, but lamb and other forms of meat at unhealthy and unsustainably high levels.
So there you go, consumers. If you want to do something about this, if you want to do something about environment, about the welfare of small ethical farmers, the health of your body, the welfare of animals, well, make some decisions in the supermarket. That might make a difference. Thanks to David Simon. He's a US lawyer. He's the author of Meatonomics. Craig Hinchliffe is a lamb producer, five generations of his family working the lands of Western Victoria in the Grampians region. And this is Blueprint for Living.